Burton Radio.
I'm Ray Burton, and welcome to another Let's Talk Gardening podcast. Our mission is to provide listeners with interesting, informative topics and up-to-date information. My co-host is Faye Caro, an award-winning gardener, horticulturalist and media presenter. Faye's passion is educating people. Oh, and she loves bugs a lot too. My passion is simply beautiful, healthy gardens. And together, each week, we cover many great gardening subjects.
Saturday morning and here come the girls, Ray and Faye, with Let's Talk Gardening.
And good day, gardening friends. It's great to be back. Hope you are tracking well. Bev Dering is ready to take your calls, 94841927, and standing by as always is our chief researcher and every other extraordinarily interesting talent, John Glidden, who supports the garden show phenomenally well. You can email us if you choose. Please go to gardening@curtainfm.com.au and salutations to Alan Simons and his chirpy PA, Peter Kelly, for kicking off the weekend in perfect nostalgic style and always with a twist of humour, which we absolutely love. And, of course, our cycling DJ, Jim Crine, and presented the cycling wrap-up just now. And he did look the part. Did you notice that? He had the whole of regalia on. He had the Lycra on, he had the cycling, those little shoes they wear.
And I was like, a bit late to the party.
Yeah, clip-clop, clip-clop. And Jim's back next Saturday. So all good. How are you?
Very good, Ray.
We've been busy, have we not?
Oh, trekking around the countryside in Melbourne.
Looking at gardens, it's been amazing, right?
Oh, it was lovely.
It's true when they call it the garden state. That is what it is.
It was beautiful, although dry, like
extremely
us, they're experiencing dryness.
I could not believe that. I thought they had rain. And actually, people that I spoke to and even I caught up with on my girlfriends for several days because we went up into the about an hour out of Melbourne and I said, it's so dry. And they blame it for they had 3 days of about 39. They say that was like taking a blowtorch to everything in their environment. But it was like Perth and I was surprised by that.
Actually, Ray, I kind of felt like we were looking into a crystal ball because I saw a lot of brown lawns, which although we do have some here, we in Perth throw a lot of water around.
Yeah, we do.
And I'm pretty sure that was one of the things that Jane Edmondson said that when she came here, how much water was thrown at our gardens.
Yeah.
I guess in defence of our gardens and our soils, we have very sandy soils.
Totally.
So they don't have the resilience of perhaps Melbourne gardens.
Well, some of the soil I saw over there, you could eat it. It's that beautiful.
Well, that's right.
You know, that's what I saw
and
in
that's,
certain areas that I traveled
You know, that's
to.
A blessing. And, you know, the climate there at currently is mild.
It's extremely mild.
To come back, I was surprised it was so hot when we got back again. 34s.
34. I'm not. It just like, you know, sorry, but damn, you know, I just desperate for some rain. And I think most people honestly are. And I know it's Easter and I know the weather's lovely and everyone's going, yay, sunny weekend. I'm thinking, how much more sun do we need, folks?
Well, traditionally, the weather used to break at Easter. Easter is based around the full moon. And and often at a full moon we do get rain. It doesn't look like it's going to happen this weekend, but it also feels early. 31st of March is early for Easter.
Yes.
So maybe a couple of weeks after that,
Fingers crossed, something
will happen. Very interesting weather outside. When I came in, it was sunny and clear skies, but I looked across to this huge blanket of cloud or smoke. I'm not sure if it was an inversion layer trapped in, but it went right across the horizon in a thick blanket and you could see where it started and finished.
Okay.
So I'm not sure what that's
What's going on.
It's very cloudy out here now.
It is. When I was collecting our coffee, I was talking to a lady in the coffee shop and she said that there was theoretically some rain forecast around midnight tonight. She said, do you believe that? And I put my hand on my heart and I said, of course I do. The Weather Bureau told me.
Are you going to sit outside and wait?
Just about.
You know they're often late, Ray.
Oh, gee, we'll take anything we can get. But yes, Melbourne, very, very dry and surprisingly so. So, but what a wonderful show that we went to, the Melbourne Garden, the Melbourne MIFGAS, Melbourne International Garden Festival.
Flower and Garden Show.
We call it MIFGAS, it's easier to say. And it was our next level, and that's putting it mildly.
Well, it is the biggest garden event in the Southern Hemisphere,
correct,
I believe.
Correct, and they do it so, so well. This is what Melbourne are good at, events, aren't they? They just do it so incredibly well.
And
it is faultless.
Unlike
it is seamless.
Our festival, which is all outdoors, they have it at the Carlton Gardens.
And they're magnificent.
The Carlton Exhibition Centre with its majestic fountain in the front yard. Yeah. There are walks, but there are levels in the building, and it's chocked full of displays of art, floristry. There are gift stalls in there and all sorts of stalls.
We bought a little painting and brought it home.
Oh, yeah. I have no doubt. Well, art displays.
That's
and
right.
Photography.
Mm-hmm.
It's just packed to the rafters, and people come from everywhere. Of course, Melbourne is very central. So it's much easier. And they can all share their plants, unlike us.
I know. That's the one sticking point, is it? The things that we see and then and I can't bring anything home with me. Yeah, not even our bulbs, you know, that they had such a huge display of bulbs over there. And I thought, but yeah, you can have them mailed to you, of course. That's a whole different scenario. But we can't bring anything back. And, you know, our laws are very strict and there's reasons for that. But it is very... I remember saying to my partner, I said, oh, well, there's no point my going in there and looking at that. I can't have anything. It's a bit of brat coming out. I also like to see what they've got over there.
And the other thing that we got to do while we were there, one was the Horticultural Media Awards.
Yes.
And that followed a walk of the show gardens with Chloe Thompson.
Yeah, that was
pretty special, meeting the designers
themselves
and creators of the gardens.
Yeah, and having it explained to us and the theory behind it, which is very interesting.
Well,
and the criteria that they have to address to create their
Well, they were very,
gardens.
Very deep.
Very.
Emmeline Bowman, who I spoke about her a few years ago after coming back from Melbourne, and she had created a small garden, and I think it was one of the achievable gardens perhaps, and it had one of the bug hotels. It was one of the first displays of bug hotels, and I remember her standing there with a shingleback lizard because her garden was all about habitat. And of course this took out all the awards.
Yeah.
There was a Horticultural Media Award for her, Gold, Best in Show. It's not been done before. And it was all about habitat. It was very recycled. It was kind of done on a budget, like unlike some of the other gardens, lots of money wasn't thrown at it. It was all about recycling, so borrowing materials and returning them or on selling them so that they were used more than once. It wasn't something you just throw away.
Yeah, no, I think I said to you, this is my favourite garden. I said to you, this is my style. Yeah.
It was very natural. It was based on nature. And they even had gone to the trouble of recording sounds of frogs.
Yeah, yeah,
and so the soundtrack was playing.
So Garden Gurus on one of the evenings just after you and I'd been there actually went to air on Channel 9 from memory. I know I watched it, and they did a great cover of the, you know, behind the grounds at the show, and that was really worth watching, Garden Gurus. And of course you could re-watch that on playback on TV if you have the functionalities. We've got
Quickly one last thing so that we can wrap this up
finished.
Well, I just wanted to say
this will go on all morning.
We were at the Horticultural Media Awards on the evening of the first day, and our very own Darren Thorpe took out an award for their podcast, All the Dirt.
Yeah.
My favourite annuals.
Yeah. And so congratulations very much to Darren Thorpe and Steve Woods. They are leading the way. They are trailblazers, are they not? And congratulations. And it was a lovely evening. And it was sensational to be part of all of that. We've got to go to Yantra, but we're talking about garlic. Charlie, how are you?
Good morning, Charlie.
Good morning. Good morning, ladies. Happy Easter.
And to you too.
Yeah. Did you have a good trip to Melbourne?
We did. It was all homework, Charlie, of course, research and you know, bringing back the latest
news. Come back
news.
Like full bottles.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've just planted my garlic yesterday.
Okay.
Good.
Now, I've put in chicken manure a few month ago or so, and ploughed it in, and a few couple of bags of cow manure.
Yes, great.
Once I put them in, I've put a top over the top. I've put a bit of mushroom compost to give them a good start. Is there anything else I need to do, ladies?
I think that'll get them off to a good start. You have to keep the moisture up to them. You want them growing really well, so you could certainly give them a weekly feed or watering of something like seaweed or fish fertilizer, or even once they're up and growing, you could give them a complete fertilizer. But for now, certainly the moisture and keep them weed free. That is critical, okay? Like your mushroom compost will probably grow weeds in the top. You could, if you want, put on a chunkier mulch over the top of that.
To suppress it a bit.
To help smother weeds and to keep moisture in.
I don't mind weeding when they, once they pop out. I just go through with a decho, you know, just lightly.
Yes, yes.
And then take the weeds out in between, you know, and... But the biggest thing I'm having is when they get close to harvest, they just kind of wilt, you know, and I don't know, it's years ago I never used to have that problem.
Oh, well, yeah, I don't know if it's the variety that you're having or if there's perhaps a virus or disease gets in. So when they are getting very close to maturity, they'll be plumping up. What you want to do is turn the water off for about a week before you harvest. Are you doing that?
Well, it's sort of because I've got other stuff growing.
Right. Well, that might be the thing, Charlie. You turn the water off. My father-in-law used to actually turn the tops over, like bend them in half. By doing that, all the energy from the leaves will go into the bulb. You let them dry out because when you harvest them, you don't want wet, damp soil. If they pull out and they're nice and dry, they'll store better as well.
Yeah, I see. Because this year I actually bought some garlic from a chap who grows them in Wattleup.
Yes.
Cost me nearly $40 for seed, but see what I get this year.
Okay, well, that might be in your favour, using a local variety that's grown well from a good quality grower.
Yeah, good move.
So, yeah.
Yeah, all right, ladies. Well, thanks very much and have a good Easter.
You too, and good luck with that, Charlie. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye. Well, that could be a good investment, couldn't it? Because garlic is very pricey to buy.
Please.
Half the time you buy it and it's already started shooting and the quality's not great. But then, again, I guess at this time of year, it's right at the end of its season. It's not going to be fresh. Mm. It's actually time to prepare and start planting. Charlie sounds like he knows what he's doing and prepared everything well.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we do have free lines, 9484 1927. Anne from Warnborough phoned in and said there were clear skies around 7 a.m. and then the next time that she looked outside, there was a thick mist everywhere, which is very unusual. And there's this very high humidity sitting out there at the moment as well. So that might burn off as the morning progresses.
It's interesting, isn't it, that happened? I know when we were in Monterey, every morning there would be this inversion layer. And as you say, it would burn off as the morning goes on. We don't often experience that here, although I'm pretty sure last year it happened up at Durian Bay.
Okay.
And it was quite a phenomenon, and it actually drifted in across the sea to the mainland and later dispersed.
Okay. We've got Bruce Larson joining us this morning from 20 to 9. Now, Bruce is from the Northern Districts Orchid Society. They've got their autumn show coming up early May. He can talk to us all about that. But it's our orchid morning and we need to know what we should be doing right now. And Faya and I were actually saying off air, we're a little bit behind the eight ball ourselves. But Bruce is going to bring us all up to speed with what we should be doing right now to get the most out of our orchids this year.
Well, you get a feeling for things in your garden, don't you, Ray? Yeah. Like when you wander around, you look at your different plants and you think about what their needs are. Mm. And I just remember other years, come February, we would get some cooler nights and that would be the trigger to put the Phalaenopsis outside to bring the Cymbidiums out. But actually, looking back at February, that would not have been the case. We did not get the cool nights then.
No.
The temperatures were 40 plus, and so perhaps the season is later. But here we are, the end of March, and that thought hadn't even been on my radar until very recently.
Yeah, absolutely. So we very much look forward to having Bruce in the studio with us this morning, and he's a lovely man to boot. We're going to take a break. When we come back, Carol, we will be chatting with you.
A lifetime of music, cartoon radio.
And you are tuned to Let's Talk Gardening. We're out to the lines. We're in Marton. Carol, thanks for waiting.
Yes, good morning, girls, and happy Easter.
Yes,
thank you, Carol. How can we help you?
I've got a passion fruit vine. It's about 7 to 8 metres long. Now I'm getting these beautiful flowers, and then all of a sudden they're shriveling up and dropping.
Can you tell me what variety it is, please, Carol?
Yeah, the Nellie Kelly.
Okay, yep. All right, one thing to check for that is that it's not growing from below the graft. These are grafted and they use a wild rootstock. And if that gets away, it can give you grief for many, many years. As to why they're not developing, could be a pollination issue. So either the bees aren't around there, the pollen could be getting washed off if you're watering early in the morning. At this time of year, it would not be ideal for those flowers to develop into fruits because we're going into a cooler season, so they're not going to be able to ripen well. I wouldn't worry at this time because they're not going to do you much good if they do develop. What I would do is wait until springtime, early spring when the weather starts warming up, cut them back by a third, mulch, feed, and when you get your first flowers then, add some potassium or potash. And that will kick them off in the right season. If your fruits don't develop then, we'll look at it then. But we need to get them flowering and fruiting in the season when they can develop to maturity.
Because there's dozens and dozens of flowers coming on them.
You know,
they do this.
Yeah. We've had such a harsh summer, Carol. February was just terrible. The poor plants wouldn't have had a chance unless you could keep the water up to them. They would have struggled. It was just too hot. A lot of people, their veggie gardens finished early this year. The summer temperature just fried things. It was almost impossible to grow in 40 degree heat unless you've got sort of controlled environment.
Well, this one gets plenty of water because I get my water free. So, I pour the water on.
Yeah, it's more than water. It's environmental.
Oh, okay. So don't stress. Just cut it back, do you think? Because it's going wild, you know.
In September, I would do it.
In September.
Mm.
Right? All right. And the lady I was to start off with, her daughter's doing the same. Her flowers are dropping off as well. So she said she was going to listen to you. to see what the result was. So, all right. So don't stress. So.
Well, these plants mature or the fruits develop in the warm weather. So, because you know, we expect we're going to go into some cold weather at some point, they're not going to have the time to develop. So you wait, you kick it into the cycle next year that you want, where it will grow. Well, you cut it back, it will regrow, you'll get flowers and fruits over the warm months.
So don't bother wasting my money on potash and all the manures and everything else. So
not now.
Not now. So all right.
We will talk about it again in September.
All right. Thanks, girls. Have a good weekend.
You too. Bye.
And we're going to Hilary's talking about strelitzias with Richard. How are you?
Good, thanks, ladies.
Good. Very good. How can we help you, Richard?
I've got a strelitzia that my daughter gave me. I put it in two spots, the latest being out in the full sun. And I know you just talked about heat and so on, but it's been there for a few years and it almost never flowers despite being mulched, fertilised and watered regularly. I just cannot work it out because two doors up from me, a gentleman has one.
Mm.
And it has not a lot of flowers, but it certainly has flowers on it. I think I got one flower from it, and now it's really struggling. Probably the heat, actually, from February, as you were just mentioning. But anyway, I just wondered, you know, any advice on that?
Yes. I was actually looking at my strelitzia yesterday. It's come through summer. Admittedly, it does get some shelter from some gum trees, but I've got another one as well in my xeriscape garden, and that gets very little water. Must admit that hasn't flowered. But what I did with the large one that's been in the ground for 20 years, I pulled out all the dead bits, cut away and tidied it all up. Have you got any dead foliage in there?
Yes, I cut it all off last weekend.
Oh, fantastic. And I bet it looks a lot better now.
Well, it doesn't look brown.
Yes. Yeah. So, and that's a good time for a lot of things in the garden right now. So then I would make that little well around it. Then I would, going into the cooler weather, pelletize manure or any manure of your preference, a layer of mulch. But then come springtime, you could even do it now as well, some controlled release fertilizer. Just general purpose would be fine. But when we get to September, something for flowering and fruiting, because the summer months are when you would expect flowers.
Yeah.
So I tend to think of a lot of things in the garden at the moment, they can do with a nip and a tuck, just make that well around the plant, give them a little bit of food. When it rains, I really love the pelletized chicken manure because a little bit goes a long way and it does help build up the soil, and that's what we want to do. We want to give it a good base for its roots, and then when it comes to flowering time, that's when we want to hit it with something that's going to flower, make it flower.
Yeah, mine's hardly flowered at all. As I said, I've got one flower.
Well, next year's the year. To give it a quick spurt, you could use NPK or you could even use a liquid fertiliser.
Yeah, I put without naming the brand, a well-known brand, 311 on it. You'll know what I'm talking about, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And it's pretty good normally because it's got other trace elements and other things in it as well. So it's pretty balanced.
Also, if you didn't get results from that, and it sounds like you didn't, try something else.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't use the same thing all the time. I mix it up a bit and then I monitor when I see results or when I don't.
Yeah. Other quick question. Last year, not this summer gone, this one before, I can grow plants out the back of my fence. So I've got a small garden there. It's on a reserve that no one goes in. Anyway, I grew cucumbers and they were gangbusters, beautiful. I grew them this summer or spring summer, and the nematodes got to them and absolutely devastated them.
Mm.
So I I've left it fallow for a while, but I want to grow some peas, which did fantastically well last winter. Will the nematodes get on the roots of peas as well as cucumbers and beans?
I'll throw that question to John as to whether nematodes can affect peas and beans. But Richard, instead of leaving the ground fallow, throw in a break crop, a green manure crop. So mustard seeds, for example, you can buy them as green manure crops, and you get that growing. And before it actually flowers, you turn it all into the soil, and that changes it all. Also, don't plant your cucumbers in the same place.
No, okay. So where can you buy that mustard seed anywhere?
You can go to any nursery. They should be able to tell you. Not sure about your local hardware store, but you can get your own mix. So I know that mustard is one of the ingredients. Any of the markets, you know, there are many growers and local seed suppliers. We've had Thrive Sustainability on, Kalamunda Garden Festival, there'd be some there, Green Life Soils.
Woodstock it, yeah.
Down to Earth.
I reckon you'd find it at your local green box as well, Richard. We have to wriggle on, Squire.
All right, thanks for your call and better luck next time.
I missed the name. Can you give it to me again? Not the mustard, the other name you had.
The suppliers?
No, the name of the product. You said it was green.
Oh, green manure.
Green manure.
And it's seeds. It's a mix of seeds.
Lovely.
Which includes mustard.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Richard.
Bye.
And Jennifer of 2J, she called in and she said, yes, very low fog up in their neck of the woods this morning as well.
I could just imagine it hanging through
there, wouldn't it?
Avon Valley. I bet the photographers have been out this morning.
I adore 2J. It's just one of those beautiful little towns. They're absolutely gorgeous. Now, we're going to talk about how to make a wicking bed using a recycled polystyrene box. This is your Easter project, if you so desire. Compliments of Faya Caro.
Well, I've done it before. Mm. It's easy. It's cheap. What I love about the polystyrene boxes is you can get them for free.
Yeah.
They certainly last a long time. The polystyrene makes for an insulated box, and then they're lightweight enough.
I was just going to say they're light. Very important at our age.
And what that means is they're portable. You can move them around. Done. You know, sometimes the sun changes. Mm. You know, you're going to have a 34-degree day. Well, that might not be ideal for some things. Mm. And then you're going to have rain, so you might want to put it out in the rain. Oh, everything loves rain. Well, we're hopeful, aren't we?
We are.
So you get your polystyrene box, a bag or two of good quality premium potting mix. I also add to my potting mixes some complete fertilizer, some slow release. I would probably, if you can get it, go the 3-month one, because I'm thinking that we're growing short-term crops, so annual veggies, etc. You want something like a barrier. So I've used weed mat. I've also used shade cloth. So what that does is allows the water to run through to the base, but it also keeps the potting mix up where we want it. And then something in the base, like you could use more polystyrene that's all broken up. You could use expanded clay if you had it lying around. That's one of the things I've used. You could use blue metal or crushed granite.
So that goes in the actual base of the box.
Yes.
And what's the purpose of that?
The purpose of that is we're creating like a water well pot, and that becomes a reservoir where water collects, but we don't need totally water. So the water will collect in the spaces amongst the rock. Then we put that in the bottom, and it only has to be 2 or 3 inches.
Mm-hmm.
That's your water reservoir layer. Then you put on a layer of shade cloth, for example, and you top it up with potting mix. Now, you also want a hole in the side which is just below your potting mix. So it's where your media layer is, so where your rocks are. And if the pot is out in the water when it rains, for example, and we get a deluge of rain, just hoping
it won't,
it can actually run out. Now, often on a bigger scale, we see people using ag pipe to deliver the water into the base. We might see an overflow kind of tap that's adjustable.
Yeah.
Honestly, Ray, I've done this before. I just put a hole in the side of the box.
Yeah, that will do.
In that reservoir layer, higher up, not down the bottom, because we want some water, to stay in there. And often that's where I fill it as well.
Yep.
So then you don't need to take up space with that water delivery line. When we first plant, we're often putting in seedlings or seeds, so you water them from the top. And, of course, if you overwater or, you know, give it a lot of water, that will actually seep down through the potting mix into the bottom layer. And remembering, we're only talking about 30 centimetres deep, so it's not terribly long before the roots get down that far.
That would have been my question, actually. How long before they can access the reservoir if they're seedlings?
Well, because it's wicking, that water reservoir comes up, it wicks up through the potting mix. So the roots don't have to get all the way down.
What causes it to wick up?
Capillary action, right?
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And that's a science thing. So
we like that.
Interesting. I have actually put a link to the wicking bed design on our Let's Talk Gardening Facebook page.
Oh, beaut.
So you can, when you actually see it, you might develop more understanding. But basically, it's easy to do. It's very cheap. Now's a great time to get your herb garden started. You can grow lots of things in a small space using, you could use a trellis and perhaps the thriller filler spiller principle.
And so this is a very simple process, what you're actually outlining to everybody. There's no additional pipes going in. You don't do any of that.
I've just dumbed the whole thing down.
Yeah, well, that's what I think we need and we like.
Well, and it's too complicated. You know, I did some a few years ago.
And they were successful.
And amazing.
It
is one of the most water efficient ways of growing anything, because the water's not wasted. It's there. You've got that reservoir. It's great if you go away for a week.
Exactly.
It kind of hangs in there.
Looks after itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love it.
Thank you.
I think it's a very simple explanation and an easy exercise or project for people at home this weekend.
And if you've got existing pots,
you
plug
can do
up
that
the hole
too.
In the bottom.
Create one in the side.
There's lots of easy and simple ways. You could use a bucket, buckets.
Yeah, amazing.
You know, you buy something in a bucket, like your big lot of fertilizer, you could convert that into a wicking bucket.
And I think Easter is very much one of those times of the year where there's a lot of gardening going on out there. I have not obviously been near a nursery. I'd like to be near a few. And just, I think they stock up like crazy for this weekend.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And going forward, if you want to do this on a bigger scale, if you want to retrofit something you've already got, there's a product called Water Ups. And you can actually adapt this into a raised garden bed. And it's a very simple way of creating a wicking bed in an existing bed. Well, you've got to take some soil out and start again. But you can apply a wicking bed principle using Water Ups. And I do have
Water Ups. Okay.
Yeah.
I'd have to have a look at that.
Yep.
As well. Interesting. I like it very much.
So more to come on that later.
Yeah, no, perfect. Now, Rita of Maida Vale called in, loves the show and wishing everyone a happy Easter, and right back at you too, Rita, and thank you for your kind words. When we return, one of our besties, Bruce Larson from the Northern District Orchid Society, shall join us. Curtain Radio. And we are back. As promised, Bruce Larson has just joined us. Good morning to you, Squire.
Good morning, Ray. How are you? Lovely to be here.
We are fabulous and love having you in the studio with us. It's been a while.
It has been a while.
Yeah, you've travelled too, haven't you? You had a big trip.
Yeah, we were lucky enough to take off to Europe and do some of that and have a look at some of the gardens, which are just magnificent,
of course.
Yeah, no, good on you.
In fact, I heard you mention earlier you'd been to Melbourne, and that was on my bucket list for this year, but it didn't happen. We headed across to Queensland, and so we've just come back. And, of course, it's raining. And if you know Queensland, you go up into the Glasshouse Mountains where Montville and those places.
Yeah.
The gardens and such are just absolutely stunning. Stunning at this
different
time.
Different world, right?
It is
such
a different
world. Such a diverse
different
country
climate
that we live in. Yeah.
It is very diverse.
Yeah.
Makes for an interesting life.
It really does. But it's hard to do it all in one year. I encourage people, if you ever get the opportunity to go to the Melbourne International Garden Festival, if that's your thing, of course, go.
Well, we're going again next year, are we not?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, and so
it's got to be on the calendar every year. Yeah. I mean, we missed a few years with COVID, et cetera. So, for sure. I mean, the garden show was cancelled for a number of years as well. So, it's been worth the wait. And it just reminded me. It was inspiring on so many levels and come away with a lot of ideas. And you see things that are new and you walk away thinking, wow, why didn't I think of that?
Yeah, they're very clever. I did see it a few years ago, and it was large and really successful then, and it's just become bigger and better.
Yeah, because they do it so well.
They do.
We could learn a lot from them, could we not? So tell us, what's going on in the orchid world? What can you share with our listeners with regard to what we should be doing? Here we are, the 31st, is it? Or I can't know, the 30th, pardon 30th. Me, I'm a day ahead of myself. What should we be thinking about right now?
I think we should be very grateful that the weather is starting to finally cool down a little bit.
Yes, thank you, God.
And for most people, including myself, if you've got a fairly large collection of orchids or any orchids and you've got them through our summer period, they've probably showing signs of being burnt.
A lot
of the gardens and some of the leaves, and particularly agapanthus and the like, they've been totally devastated.
Yeah.
And orchids are much the same. And even in my situation where I've put an extra layer of shade cloth, so, we try to keep them cool and water them in the mornings, extra shade cloth. But with the temperatures we've experienced and those four or five little heat waves that we had of really, really hot weather, the plants just can't sustain that sort of temperature. Orchids in particular, they come from very much tropical conditions.
Exactly, where there's humidity.
Yeah,
and of course, the higher the temperature, the lower the humidity, right?
Exactly. So if you've got high humidity, like you'd experience in Queensland or the natural environment in South America or Asia, those high temperatures, they're not sustained and they're not dry.
Yeah, exactly.
The high humidity helps to preserve the leaves.
Yeah.
In this case, we've seen long periods of hot weather. The leaves have really become burnt.
It's a battle.
So now it's a case of what do we do from here? If those leaves are burnt, unsightly, you not necessarily have to cut the dead parts off, but you want to keep an eye on it just in case they get a fungal infection. Then I'd certainly be cutting the leaves back. And if you don't like the look, by all means, cut them down. The leaf itself is, useless at that point. So now we're just starting to see a little bit of change in temperature. We're still experiencing the 30s, but the days are much shorter. The nights have now all of a sudden just started to become a little bit cooler.
A little bit, yes.
So the orchids are going to start to breathe a little bit. And if you're looking at wanting to get things like cymbidiums and even cattleyas and other things to sort of send up their flower spikes, you need that cooler temperature. You need a temperature differential of about 15 degrees C to initiate the flower spikes.
Right.
So if you haven't been watering your cymbidiums on those really hot nights in the evening to really act like a Coolgardie safe effect with the sea breeze to cool them down, it's still time, but the flowering will be much later. And don't be surprised if the flowering is maybe not as good as what it has been in previous
years. Because of this weather cycle.
Yeah, and certainly it's much later.
Later.
So for cattleyas and things, which I grow a lot of.
They're my fave.
They haven't. Mm. There's one or two that have come into flower. May you would tend to see quite a lot. So the show that we have coming up, which is a week before Mother's Day, you would expect to see a lot of cattleyas and things in flower. Still not sure that we're going to get that volume that we would normally get.
Crystal ball there,
but
just
they'll,
yet.
They'll come. They'll just be later.
They'll just be later. So tell us about this festival coming up. It's in the Bruce Douglas Pavilion at Swanview.
At Swanview. So it's in Salisbury Road in Swanview. Well signposted. It's a very large area for sports centres and other activities. starts it, it we'll set it all up on the Saturday, and it'll all be ready for the public on Sunday from 9 o'clock till 3 o'clock. Bruce Douglas, and we will have a few other garden providers there. So there'll be gerberas, some zygocactus and bromelades, and a few lots of other bits, some desert roses and the like. But lots of orchids, hopefully in flower, on display, and there will be a bit of a show, which will be judged on the Saturday evening. To have a look at some of the.
So it's a one-day event between 9 and 3. You need to plot this. Put it in your diary, folks. Yes.
Yep, $5 entry and $3 for seniors and the like, and you get a free cuppa as you come through the door.
How good is that?
And opportunity to sit around and socialise.
Exactly.
But also to talk to all of those of us that maybe can offer some advice on how to look after your orchids and get the best out of them.
Yeah, and potting demonstrations as well? Bruce?
Yeah, look, it's not a big haul this time of year, so we probably won't have any set up potting demonstrations, but happy to talk to people if they bring their plants along and want us to sort of show what to do, we'd be more than happy to do all of that.
Great. Because sometimes, you know, people, they look at a plant and go, oh, I just don't have the confidence, don't know what to do about it. Mm. So if they actually get to see and have it explained to them step by step, it makes a lot more user friendly.
Yeah, as I say, an eyeful's better than a mouthful.
And what I like too is that at these fairs you have people can, if they want to, they can purchase the appropriate correct pots and all of the accessories that can go with it. So to set yourself up, very important to have the right equipment as well.
It is. Yeah, you do. You need to make sure that you're growing them, and you were just talking
about... The
right
fertilisers,
different, the right sort of size pots for the plant. A lot of people sometimes get caught by over-potting, so put an orchid into a pot with a lot of potting mix in it and the plant sitting in the middle of this open space.
He doesn't want it.
And the problem with that is that there's not the root size or the root ball to absorb all the moisture, so the moisture in the middle stays very wet, and if the roots are sitting in that, they don't dry out, and therefore they... potentially get a bit of fungal infection and the root system dies. So because most of our orchids, of course, that we grow are epiphytes, so they grow on trees and on rocks. The roots do not like to have a lot of water sitting around them, and certainly not being able to get access to the air.
So Bruce, I know a lot of the orchids I've got will grow in a chunky bark.
Yes.
Will that be available on the day?
We'll have some potting mixes available in limited supply, but bark has been readily available. It's been the most commonly used potting media for many years now. The quality of the bark is not as good as it used to be, unfortunately. We're suggesting to people to try and buy some from really creditable orchid growers like Easy Grow out at Lansdale. But even so, you're still probably worth sieving it, getting some of the fine dust out of it, or just washing it, because the dust clogs up all the gaps. As I said just a little while ago, if the air can't get through the potting mix and to the roots, if it's clogged up with dust and the other particles, then the roots are going to die. So it needs to be free draining, retain a little bit of moisture so the plant can feed and draw nutrients out of it. So bark is good. One of the things that I've been using for the last couple of years and experimenting because of the quality that's been available, has been looking at koi, which is the coconut chunks. And hydroponic people have been using this for some time, and they've actually produced one which is really quite chunky in a real chip form, and I'm getting really good results with that. And because it's hydroponically, or produced for the hydroponic market, it's had all the salts reduced out of it, so it conforms with a really quite tight specifications, and it's really quite a good product. It comes in at about 5.5 on the pH scale, which is pretty good. So all you do is add a little bit of dolomite lime to the potting mix when you repot your plant, brings the pH up a bit, and perfect for orchids.
Really interesting.
What springs to mind there is the chunky... the blocks that you can get that swell up that are coir and bark.
Suitable? Look, I think I have tried those blocks that you put into a bucket or into a bin. They tend to be very fine particles. So what I'm talking about is chunks that are about the size of your thumbnail or fingernail. So it's a bit more like a bark. I'm not aware if it's available from all of the hydroponic shops, but certainly I found a source where it's available. I just mentioned I'd been to Queensland, so as you do when you're mad on orchids like I do,
I convinced
the wife to drive past a orchid house and dropped in. So one of the very large orchid growers, commercial growers in Queensland, just at the foothills of the Glasshouse Mountain, they grow everything in koi, and they've been doing it for some years, and they're a very successful major commercial grower. So you can see that it is well used, and it's been tried and tested now.
Very interesting.
And use the chunky stuff.
Okay, time for a short break. On the other side of this, get ready, because I'm going to give something away. Curtain Radio. And we are back. You're tuned to Let's Talk Gardening. Our special guest in the studio, Bruce Larson from the Northern Districts Orchid Society. And we have been hearing a little information so far, more to come about orchid care and what we need to be thinking about right now. And we were just been discussing the orchid mixes and what you need to look out for, because what I've learned as we go along is so important. It's not a one size fits all. Gardening is meant to be simple, and we do overcomplicate it, I know that, but certainly with your beautiful collections of plants and the plants that you do put a lot of, you know, time and money into, get that medium right, get that potting medium absolutely right, because that's key, I think.
Well, and just talking to Bruce in the break, you can't go to your local hardware store and get what you need. So don't be confused by that bag that says orchid potting mix.
Yeah, don't go there.
It is not what you want for these orchids.
No. For these babies. Absolutely.
No, the other thing to just keep in mind, of course, is there's so many different varieties of orchids. So whether you're growing cymbidiums or cattleyas, or maybe you're growing oncidiums and the like, you do need to just be conscious that sometimes the bark or the potting mix needs to vary. So if they've got a very fine root structure, you need a smaller particle versus the big, strong cymbidiums, which have a big, robust root system, or the cattleyas. So come along to one of our shows or our meetings, talk to us about what you might want, and we can set you on the right path.
Yeah, that's the beauty of these types of fairs, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I love it. All right, if you haven't won a prize in the last 28 days and you are a Curtin FM member, giving you a chance to win a $75 gift voucher from Green Life Soil Co. in Middle Swan, thanks to our good friends out there, Paul and Linda Michener. Delivering a green garden is their motto, and if you go to greenlifesoil.com.au, you can browse their free Perth gardening guides, and they're very good. I do recommend and download a lot of their different resources that they have on their website. And this week, Linda says that leeks are a great addition to your autumn and winter garden. They take a while to grow, but don't take up much space, so you can dot them around your garden and, yes, even in between your roses. So if you are short on space, you can also try them in pots of a decent size. Homegrown leeks are perfect, and, yes, they are outdoor leeks for hearty winter dishes or at any time, I think. So if you'd like more info, check out Green Life. And we also recommend you can browse their Facebook page for updates. They do deliver across the metro area, and what I love is they provide courtesy trailers too, so you can go and do your own thing easy. They are open today, but they are closed, of course, because tomorrow is Easter, and they are closed on Easter Monday, back to normal the following week, or certainly by Tuesday, I should say. So for your chance to win a $75 gift voucher, here is John's tricky question. True or false? Botanically speaking, if you put chopped up tomato, capsicum, pumpkin and zucchini in a bowl, you have yourself a real fruit salad. True or false? Botanically speaking, if you put chopped up tomato, capsicum, pumpkin and zucchini in a bowl, you have a real fruit salad. True or false? Give Bev a call, 9484 1927. We'll be heading to the news at about 9 a.m. Okay.
All right. Just going back to the question about can peas and beans get nematodes?
Yeah.
Yes, they can.
Yeah.
So I briefly touched on what you can do to break the cycle of nematodes. And one was to sow a green manure crop such as mustard. Create a rich organic soil by adding compost, manures and mulches, and these encourage beneficial nematodes, which, believe it or not, will attack the pest species. So having good, well-improved soil is a big help. Don't forget the crop rotation and marigolds. repel nematodes. So plant a few marigolds around. But
helps.
Yeah, those few key things will help put you on the right
with
track.
With the issue. Okay, very good. All right, well, the phones have gone crazy. As one expects with our listeners, they love playing with our competitions. Good on you. And we love giving away a little prize each week. Got another one coming up in the next hour from Bigger Trees as well. Mm-hmm. So we'll give you... Oh, we do have a winner, George from Applecross. Good on you, George. The question was true or false. Botanically speaking, if you put chopped up tomato, capsicum, pumpkin and zucchini in a bowl, you have a real fruit salad. What do you think, Faye? True or false?
I think botanically speaking, yes, they are all fruits.
Indeed they are. Okay, so voucher on its way to you this week. George will let us know what you get up to with it. Good on you. And hey, it's time to go for the 9 a.m. news. We'll be back shortly. And the temperature has jumped up to 20.8 degrees Celsius. Humidity has dropped down to 81%. We are looking at a partly cloudy day today with a maximum of 29. The minimum overnight will be 17. That's pretty warm, with a mostly sunny day tomorrow of 29 for Easter. And Easter Monday, the minimum overnight will be 14, a sunny day and a maximum of 28. Looking ahead for the rest of the week, yeah, look, we've got 29s and we've got a 31 and a 32 and a 33. I do like it when there's a 2 in front, but hey, beggars can't be choosers. What are we going to do about it? We're heading out to Bateman. Alison, good morning.
Good morning, Ray. How are you doing?
We are well, thank you.
Oh, thanks for putting me on. Look, I've got a little gardening business. And I absolutely love my roses and everything. So I have a lot of clients who have roses, and obviously we've been decimated with the chili thrip.
Yes, we have.
We've tried all the things. Everybody's got marigolds growing and, yeah, you know, we've treated all the soil and everything. But I found a way a couple of weeks ago, about 4 weeks ago. I thought, I'm sick of it. I want some roses. And so I started spraying. I looked at wet soil and first, so I followed a little bit of a process. And if people...
You just broke up then a bit, Alison. Can you repeat that, love? Just, I don't know, you're probably on a mobile phone, obviously. And
yes, I am on a mobile, sorry.
Just broke up a tad then.
So I've done a bit of a process. Firstly, I've wetted soil all the area around each row.
The wetting of the soil, yes.
Yes, thoroughly soaked it. So that the rows had heaps and heaps of water. I then cut off and deadheaded everything. You don't need to be severe with your cutting. I then looked at Yates Success Ultra,
yeah,
and I mixed 20 mils of it in a 5 litre sprayer.
Yeah.
So I think that was important, that instead of using little amounts, I almost doubled it, what they said. Mm. Obviously, I then sprayed all the rows, so that included all of the branches, all of the leaves, and all of the buds. And I sprayed until the rose dripped. It was literally, each one was dripping. Now, because of our heat with our 30-odd degrees, and you can't spray during the day, I was spraying at night time. I started at 5:36. In some cases, I was finishing about 7:45 at night, so it was dark. But that helped. I also found do not water, obviously, for the next 2 days. And then I had proper new growth in 3 to 4 days. My 60 roses at the moment are covered in buds and flowers, and they're proper and they're beautiful. So having done that, I then followed up with a feed of sheep manure and a sprinkling of black marble for each rose. Now, I've done that for several of my clients who also have extensive rose gardens, and it's working. Mm. So for those people who want their roses, the other thing I did was, it was 3 sprays. So over 3 weeks,
yeah,
1 spray a week. And look, that worked. So for those out there who are desperate for their roses and are just crying seeing the chili thrip decimate them, I also, the chilli shrimp attacked all my azaleas as well.
Yeah, they are moving in. They're certainly in other plants. Yep.
Yes, yes. So I sprayed all the azaleas as well, and it seemed to control them there as well.
So this information, Alison, yeah, we the late Rob Melville gave us a lot of information, Bob Melville, I should say, a lot of information along very similar lines of what you're describing. We do have podcast compilations on the Curtin Radio website around exactly that and the treatment and, you know, what you've just mentioned. It's very, very similar. And if that's the way you need to go to control and keep your roses alive and actually get some
Alison,
blooms.
That actually sounds like some of the best advice I've heard. The only thing I would probably suggest is that second spray alternating so that there's no resistance building up with the chilli thrips.
Yep, yep, that could work. I was just looking for a solution. I like that thinking.
As well, yeah.
You know, I know Success Ultra, I think it's one of the, it sounds good, worth a try.
I've tried some of the others and over the years, and I just thought, you know, what do we do here? But
it's that all we're losing. A lot of people are losing roses, Alison.
Exactly.
Yeah, I know that's
and
happening.
And they're being told to pull them out.
And people are pulling them out.
And that's I find that really sad.
So do I.
Probably the combination of the extreme heat we've had this summer.
Oh, yeah, they came out in force. You know, February was,
our limited water as well. So I just found that by the thoroughly soaking. And by the way, at this time, my bore broke. So I was doing all this by hand.
Yeah.
It did. I had results in 3 to 4 days. I've just done one of my clients last night. And it's 7 days since I did her first spray. And she's got amazing new growth. And all the buds have opened up properly. And she's thrilled. So,
Of course.
I just thought I'd share it with those people out there who are struggling.
Who are
desperate to get their roses back on track. But it was the 20 mils, like I experimented with the amount because I didn't want to tell people until I had the amount right. But I put in 20 mils, and I had listened to Bob Melville's one up there, his comments. So I did know, and that's why I literally drowned it in the thing. And so it was also, as it dripped, it went into the soil as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you're dealing with those ones that are germinating in the soil as well.
Yeah, it's been a shocking year, I have to say, Alison, really, really bad with the chilli thrip. It's certainly not going anywhere like we had hoped.
No.
Yeah. So, all right, look, thank you for your information out to our listeners.
All right. Thank you, love. See you.
Well. Thanks, bye. Alison. Cheers. Bye. And we've got a question for you, Bruce. We're in Mullaloo. Gail, good morning.
Oh, hi. Can I talk to Bruce, please?
He's right here.
Hi, Gail.
Good. Hi, I do come and visit you every end of every, isn't it July, and up to your orchid show at Lansdale?
Yes.
I'm always up there. Now, I've got a couple of questions. So I buy the medium potting mix from them, and always have. I've got quite a lot of cymbidiums, and I've got a couple of cattleyas, and one I did buy off you year before last is absolutely magnificent. Now, what would you suggest? I've got the strike back for orchids, liquid and granular, and I've got. So, what would you be fertilising them now, with after the heat and coming into making spikes?
Yep.
So, what would you think would be a good fertilising regime for them?
Okay. Well, as we come into the cooler part of the year, the plants themselves start to slow down in their growth. We've still got a few weeks left of reasonable weather, and you can expect the plants to still grow and therefore take up, you know, the nitrogen. But once we get into the next month or 3 weeks or so, once we cool down a little bit, and particularly with the days shortening, they're not going to be so actively growing. So using high nitrogen isn't going to be successful, and you might use a fertiliser comp which has got a higher potassium, potash.
I've got some straight potassium here now.
Yeah, look, you could just put that, you know, teaspoon in a 5 gallon, in the 9 litre watering can, that teaspoon sort of ratio.
9 litre. Yeah, I've got.
Yeah,
that.
Not too strong, okay. Because you don't want to the salt level too high and burn the roots. But the plant itself is not going to take up a lot more nitrogen as it slows down in the coming, in the next say month. Uh-huh. And what the plant will benefit from is a higher potash regime. And that will help to sort of build the cell structure for producing potentially more flowers, but also give them some longevity.
That's good. And what temperature were you thinking? I mean, it's really still, I'm a full-on gardener. I'll be out there shortly in the sun out there, and it's still pretty warm. Yeah. What temperature do you really think that would be what you were suggesting? What would be the daytime temperature? Because the sun's come out now.
Yeah, look, once you get under about 30 degrees, then you can start to consistently under 30, then you're looking at a change in the weather structure.
Okay, got it.
The other thing to keep in mind is that our hours are much shorter now.
Oh, yeah.
So the plant, obviously, like all plants, needs photosynthesis to make them to grow and to convert the nutrients into the plant growth. So daylight hours are shorter. Plants not performing the same sort of process on a much shorter scale, obviously. So, yeah, cut back the nitrogen. You could actually cut the nitrogen back a little bit now, but we're fortunate at this time, this year, where we still are experiencing reasonably good weather. So there is still a little bit of growth there to achieve. So I'd just watch it over the next few weeks. As soon as the temperatures are below 30, I would be looking to change the regime.
Okay, got that. I've got two cattleyas. Unfortunately, they did go off quite yellowy, even looking after them reasonably well with one I did buy a couple of years ago. I did put, wrong time of the year, I know, one in a new tight pot, I know about the roots. They're okay, that some of those new, I know they're epiphytes, roots coming up, but they still don't look as green as I would like, even though they're in a shade under trees.
Yeah, can I suggest that you might find that growing in bark and using nitrogen and then a heavy watering through the summer months, the bark becomes quite acidic, so the pH drops down.
Oh, righto.
Throw a dose of dolomite lime onto the pot.
Oh, okay.
You'll increase the pH, which give the root system a much better environment in which to grow and foster. But the other thing, of course, is that it's adding nutrients and magnesium and the like, which will green the plant back up. So,
I got that.
So the dolomite lime has calcium and magnesium as part of the elements within it, and that helps to build the structure, but it also increases the vibrancy of the plant in terms of bringing it back into a nice, healthy green.
Oh, I've got that. I'm writing all this down, by the way. I've got my pen, paper, and I'm right. Okay.
The other thing just to keep in mind, and I did this yesterday, because of the very hot summer, we've had extra shade cloth, so I've been growing my cattleyas in about 75-80% shade. I talked about photosynthesis and the need for the daylight. The days are getting shorter. I've now taken that extra shade layer off, so I'm now getting about 50-60% shade. And the plants, and I'm betting and hoping we don't get any more days over 35. Certainly we won't get prolonged periods of very hot days. And that will help the plants to grow. But you also need the light to help bring about the flowering as well. So if you are growing them in too much shade under the canopy of a very heavily laden tree, then the light factor may not be sufficient to trigger the flowering component.
But in your case,
if they're light, I'd chuck some dolomite lime on them right now.
I've got it. Good. And I will see. Thank you very much. That's quite a... I've got that all written down. I'm on it.
Well done, Gail. Well done.
I'm really into it. I will see you up at your show again this year.
Wonderful. Look forward to seeing you again.
Probably on Friday, and I hope you've got another Cattleya for sale.
I'm sure there will be.
I've got it. The one I got off you last year was absolutely magnificent. I got 10 flowers, I think, wow. 10 altogether off two spikes. And they're lovely. Looking brilliant. Yellow, oh, I love it. I've got photos. I love it, I love it.
Well done, well done.
Thank you very much for all your help.
Thanks, Gail.
Okay.
Cheers for now. Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, nice phone call. Okay, I know they've got calls coming through. 9484 1927 is our number. What's next, Faye Akara?
Well, I was just taking emails, the opportunity to look up Success Ultra, and the active constituent is spinetoram. And I was just trying to find out the relationship with beneficial insects and how it's targeted. So there's papers, there's new evidence. It's not going to be great for the beneficial insects. It's still going to cause some harm, but that's to be continued, right? There's too much reading to do to come to a definitive answer.
But, I know, very frustrating.
You know, I like the fact that Alison was doing more than just applying sprays. Mm. And, in fact, when you look at the rate to use, it's actually safe to use on your vegetables, which means it's safe for us. Mm. It's how it relates to those beneficial insects that concerns me. And interesting, some of the rates recommended are 5 mils per litre for vegetables, which is 25 mils per litre, 25 mils for 5 litres, whereas Alison was talking about using 20 mils per 5 litres.
Was it 5?
As double the rate.
Yeah. Okay.
So, yeah, you've got to be very careful about using as per the instructions on the label generally, and to alternate sprays because otherwise insects can become resistant.
Correct.
And that product also will affect aphids and the caterpillar family. Mm. So whether it will affect your hoverfly
larva. If you cut the flowers off the rose, and there's no activity on the rose,
you will potentially have maybe there will be some scale. There may be aphids there on some of the plant. Mm. Hoverfly larva and or eggs, lacewing larva.
Mm.
So, little predatory flower spiders. Yeah, it's a big subject. People have to work out what's right for them in their gardens.
Yeah, my frustration is that people are losing their roses, and it's either allow them to be lost or find a resolution that is palatable, you know, and that's an individual thing. Obviously, you wouldn't do it. And I've let my roses go this year, and it's been disastrous. Okay, we shall return. Curtain Radio. And you're tuned to Let's Talk Gardening with Ray and Faye, and Bruce Larson is our special guest in the studio. We're talking orchids today. Bruce is from the Northern Districts Orchid Society. And so, yes, we're learning how to make your orchids flower. And it is a challenge, like everything, because of the climatical conditions that we have had these past few months. So we just need to listen and learn and continue on. Gee, we're a resilient bunch in Perth, aren't we?
We are.
We have to be. We gardeners.
So are our orchids, surprisingly.
Are resilient, yeah.
Especially if you
tougher
grow...
than you think, right?
Sorry?
Tougher than you think.
Yeah, some
providing
of them are.
You
yeah, they are tough.
Know what you're doing.
And particularly
them.
If you're growing some of the Australian native varieties,
yeah,
you know, the speciosums and all the dendrobium.
Love
from
them.
The bigibbums and so on, which are coming into flower now. They really do survive well in our West Australian heat. And the speciosums, of course, might get a little bit burnt on the leaves if they're subject to the direct light, but that really makes them flower. So they should hopefully, come August, September, they should be masses of flowers on all the speciosums that people are growing.
Mm. Yeah. So When should our common orchids be fertilised, Bruce, and with what?
Look, as we just talked a little bit, through the growing phase, which is obviously spring, summer and into autumn, good high nitrogen levels up to 18 or 20% is really effective. And there's a number of brands, and we obviously won't go through all of them, but anything that's got the normal NPK type fertilisers that provide the broad spread of key elements for growth, nitrogen, the potassium, phosphorus and so on, they all work really well. And in conjunction with some dolomite lime early in the season, and then again at this time of the year, as we just mentioned to Gail, they help to keep the vibrancy in the plant in terms of the cell structure and keep them green, but also keeps the pH at a good level for the root system to be active. And if the root system's active, then the nitrogen gets taken up and the other trace elements and the like. And as we come into this time of the year where it starts to cool down, that triggers a lot of the flowering processes. So the cooler nights, change in temperature, change in environment, shorter daylight hours, they all sort of combine to contribute to the initiation of the flower spikes.
And a sweeping question, because I know it's not a one answer to all, watering with orchids at the moment.
Yeah, look, you're probably still watering reasonably regularly. I'm maybe every second day at the moment. Mm. During our hot summer, obviously, we were watering pretty much every day for a few minutes, trying to keep a little bit of humidity around them,
but of course,
keep the plants from drying out. And they will dry out, especially if we get, depends again where you live. If you're living near the coast, you've got more chance of having a really reasonable outcome during this summer. If you're living out in the eastern suburbs and you get those hot, dry, easterly winds coming through, the plants will dry out very quickly.
The wind.
The wind is shocking. Just such a harsh environment for them. So more watering is required. At the moment, I'd be looking at just cutting back the watering time, just keeping them moist, and certainly always water in the mornings so that they, because they're epiphytes, the roots don't like to be wet during the night periods. Yes, in the hot summertime, they're okay. But as we get into these cooler nights, now we're dropping down to 12 or 14 degrees at night. So the roots seem to need to be pretty much dry by nighttime. So water in the morning. Mm. If you've got windy environment, maybe you've got to water a little bit more. Mm. Maybe you've got to give them a little bit, during the late afternoon with enough time to dry out.
Yeah.
And obviously, if you've got rainwater, then they'll do even better than...
Yes, they will.
Tap water. The tap water tends to have quite a lot of salt level in it, whereas the rainwater is, ideal. Good quality bore water is great also. So you just need to monitor it. And we did this at the club meeting just on last Monday night. People brought their sample of their water in and we tested it all for them.
That's an interesting
exercise.
Gave
them some feedback about what the salt levels were.
Very
and
important.
Interestingly, some people's tap water is at 400 or 500 parts per million, in the old scales, which means that if you're coming to fertilise it, you can't add very much more to that at all. Whereas if you're using rainwater with basically zero, then you can bring that up to, 400 or 500 parts per million and allow the plant to have a good supply of nutrient. And bore waters tend to vary across Western Australia, so they might have 50 or even up to 200 parts per million, but generally they're a lot lower.
That's very interesting. You think about how watering regimes have changed and those with bores have been stopped from watering their third day a week, so they're obviously now having to use tap water.
Yep.
And you wonder what the water quality is. So where we diagnose all these problems in the garden, never would have we thought about the water quality and the salt levels being a consideration.
Well, I'm actually considering, I would like to look at a reverse osmosis system.
Yep.
Yep, I think it's an investment, I think.
Yeah, and you can buy small home domestic reverse osmosis systems.
Yep.
If you have a look at, and as you've done and visited some of the big commercial growers for the pot plant trade and the like, they pretty much all use reverse osmosis systems so they can control not only the salt levels, but then the fertilising levels to give the optimum output and optimum growth for their plants. And of course, they're controlling the environment in which they grow them so they can bring them into flower at the right time for the market, whether it's Mother's Day, Father's Day, or like the big Phalaenopsis growers, every 2 or 3 weeks they're bringing a new batch into flower to feed into the marketplace. So that's all control systems, and having good quality water is just a critical element.
It is,
that.
But then when people get them home, and of course,
and that's where we sometimes run into trouble because they've come from a different environment altogether from the commercial growers, and all of a sudden they've come out of that wonderfully protected environment into our maybe slightly harsher environment at home. So
one
quality
more thing.
Of water, temperature.
It's never ending. We're in Bedford. Good morning, Jan. How's it going?
Oh, hi, girls. Well, my avocado tree's been looking not the best for a while, and the leaves have all gone brown, and I thought it's dying. But in the last couple of weeks, I've been getting new shoots starting. So what do I do? Do we trim up all the dead branches and hope for the best?
You absolutely could, because every time you prune back a plant, you encourage it to put out new shoots. So
that's what I was hoping.
Yeah. So the new growth is a good indication that everything's okay. The damaged growth is an indication that it has probably struggled, and that would be no surprise given our summer conditions. A bit like us, Jan, a bit frayed around the edges. So certainly building up your soil, adding compost with clay, giving a covering of mulch and a controlled release fertiliser, and keeping the water up to it, maybe even seaweed or
I gave it some seaweed about a week or so ago. I thought that might help. So do I keep on doing that? And I usually give it NPK.
Is it a slow release NPK?
Yes, yeah.
Yep. That sounds good. And yes, absolutely, you can give it seaweed weekly if you want to.
Right. Yes, I did about 2 weeks ago, and I was thinking of doing it again today if you thought that was a good idea. Yeah.
But as I said earlier in the program, I also like to alternate things. So I tend not to use the same thing week after week.
Also, I normally give it blood and bone as well.
Okay, yes.
Idea.
A great slow release feed for the soil and the plants. So, yep.
Yeah, it's quite a big tree, and it's never been really, really great. In our old house, we had a huge house that was fantastic, but this one was supposed to be a house, but it's not. It's a, what is it, shepherd.
Okay.
And it hasn't been as good as the one we used to have. But anyway,
well, maybe get another one. Double check whether it's an A or a B variety,
okay,
and get another one. That might help your fruit set. But definitely cut it back. That will encourage more growth and give it potassium when it flowers.
Oh, good. Yeah, it's quite big, and it really gives a bit of shade to the garden too. So.
Thanks for your call, Jan. Thank you, love.
Thanks.
Take care. Have a good Easter.
Have a good Easter too.
We shall. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
I know you've got a couple of emails lurking.
I have.
Yeah.
And this one has come in from Tracy of Spearwood, and it's a photo of cottony cushion scale on one of the native plants. So they do have some natural predators, but what I would recommend is giving it a cut back, removing as much of the infestation as you can. If you need to spray, I would go with eco oil. It's organic certified, and that also can help encourage and bring in predators for this one. But opening up the plant, removing the infestation, so you've got rid of most of them, and if you can do that, you wouldn't even have to spray.
Mm. Okay, very good.
They're funny little things, and you can, when you find them, you may find two different types because their crawlers look different to the adults. The adults there look like they've been there for a long time. They're well advanced.
Mm.
That's the same one. Then we have a question about an orange tree in a pot, and it is a very beautiful, healthy looking orange tree in a lovely blue ceramic pot. It's unable to be repotted because of the size. all you can really do is maintain the top growth to match the roots a bit, so you can cut it back. If you can't pot it on, then a couple of things are going to happen. Now, it's sitting on bricks, so I suspect if it hasn't already, the roots will go into the ground. So if you're happy with that, that's fine. That's going to live there indefinitely. At some point, it will clog up the holes in the bottom. The roots will swell. And then what you'll get is water pooling in the pot if it gets too wet because there's no drainage. So at some point, the pot will probably crack.
Yeah.
But if you can't repot it, that's just what will happen. The roots going down into the ground will continue to feed. All you can really do is just manage the top growth and enjoy any fruits that you do get in the meantime.
Yeah.
Now, right. I've got some blueberries here, a couple of different pots. The plants themselves are looking a little bit sun damaged, which is no surprise given our recent weather. I would say you could cut them in half because you've got one leader like shooting for the sky. Alternatively, if you don't want to lose the height of the plant, go through with your secateurs and just nip back all of the tips all the way over, and that will encourage it to bush out. I would also suggest perhaps potting them into the next size pot and using an azalea camellia potting mix. That will give you the acidic soil that it needs. Other than that, they look all right. So once they've got a cutback, they'll put on some new growth. And once again, controlled release fertilizer for flowering and fruiting plants. And give them lots of light. I think the danger of them burning is probably over now.
Okay. Have we caught up?
There's probably a couple, but there's lots of words here floating around, right?
All right. I'm going to give away a $75 gift voucher from Bigger Trees up in Pickering Brook. You must be a Curtin FM member and not to have won a prize in the last 28 days. We have these rules so that we keep it fair and everyone gets to have a go. Now, Bigger Trees are the Frangipani tree specialist, but did you know they are also an ornamental and fruit tree specialist nursery too? Bigger Trees plants have bounced back beautifully from summer, enabling the addition of a lot of new and magnificent stock to come through. We do suggest you browse their colourful Facebook page for updates and videos of the nursery, or if technology is not your thing, and we're very well aware that a lot of our listeners, it is not, so we understand Facebook page and websites are all too difficult. Look, plot yourself a visit up there at some point. It's just a nice day out. Get up there to Pickering Brook. There's beautiful cafes and so much to see on the way through. It's just a lovely day out. So from big plants to little plants, Bigger Trees has you covered. They do deliver across the metro area for your convenience. Now, they're normally open Thursday to Sunday each week. However, Easter weekend, they're only open on Easter Monday between 10 and 2. Go to Bigger Trees for details or, you know, give them a call and see what their movements are. But as far as I know, it's this Monday 10 to 2 p.m. only that they will be open over the long Easter weekend. Now, here's your tricky question from John Glidden, our quiz master. The Beach Boys were not impressed by the cook on the sloop John B. First he threw away their grits, then he took and ate up all their what? Tricky question. Got to know your music, guys, and you do, as Curtin FM listeners. The Beach Boys were not impressed by the cook on the sloop John B. First he threw away their grits, then he took and ate up all of their what? Give Bev a call now, 94841927. We shall return. Curtin Radio. And you're tuned to Let's Talk Gardening. Our special guest is Bruce Larson this morning, and we have been talking orchids. We've got about 19 minutes of the program left. Get your calls through, 94841927. Now, we do have a winner. Good on you, Julie of Thornley, for our Bigger Tree $75 gift voucher. Do let us know what you do, Julie. That will be on its way to you this week. The question was, the Beach Boys were not impressed by the cook on the sloop John B. First he threw away their grits, then he took and ate up all of their what? The answer is corn. Okay, well done to you. Enjoy. Okay, carry on.
Well, we have another email from Eric, and he says he loves our show. And he'd like some assistance for companion plants below a number of tropical plants that are in full shade in an area about 50 square metres. Now, are we thinking companion plants that would do well in the shade with tropical plants? So
yeah, we need a bit more information, don't we, really? It's a bit broad.
Well, we just had a little bit of a discussion. Bromeliads are certainly one plant that you could dot under, and you could mass plant them. That would be would do really well. Mm-hmm. Ferns are another one, and
perfect.
There's some really hardy ferns that would cover the ground. I've had good luck with Plectranthus. They don't mind the shade. Clivias do very well planted and certainly suit that tropical theme. Gingers, depending on how much or if any sun they get, you might not get the flowers, but you certainly get the foliage.
Colour.
Oh, there's so many gorgeous plants that are ground covers, but I'd also be looking at different heights and different foliage textures and colours. Duranta, Sheena's Gold, is a beautiful one that colours up when it's stressed, goes beautiful yellow, Sheena's Gold.
If anyone knows where to buy that at the moment, let me know. I'm on the mission for someone else, but it's very hard to get hold of at the moment.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it comes and goes. So Duranta's, Sheena's Gold, let us know if anyone can track it.
Certainly lily pillies will tolerate that environment. Yeah. And Bruce suggested
some orchids.
Yeah.
Yeah. Grow your cattleyas in there, and there's a variety of other phalaenopsis probably, and
I could see a layered garden, like if you've got any tree trunks that you've cut down or cocos perfect. Palm, pop them in, and then you could layer. So you could put your orchids in pots on a stand at the back and then fill up the front. Of course, there's lots of annuals too, like colas do very well.
Yep. Yeah, and if you're adventurous, and it sounds like there's a fair bit of thought gone into this particular garden. So if you've got that sort of nice humid environment with taking up your idea about the logs, you could actually mount some Oncidium orchids, for example, and they would love that sort of environment where the roots would attach to the log. And because, as we've been talking about earlier, they dry out pretty well, they love that environment. So moist, air movement, free draining, and if you've got enough light in there, you will get masses of sprays of yellow and brown flowers.
Oh, and you know what else would team really well in this rainforest developing garden? Aroids.
Oh, yes.
They will climb up the trunks of any trees, Monstera, philodendrons, and then, of course, Ripsalis.
And if you're really brave, go and buy a vanilla orchid and put that in there. That might not flower, but it'll love that environment. And I've managed to flower one in that sort of environment.
And that's quite hard to do, so well done.
Yeah, they are.
Because you're a pro, though.
I missed the opportunity to get pods, but that's my goal for this year.
That was a challenge we put to you, wasn't
it?
Yes,
it is. Still there.
Oh, good on you. I'm glad you're keeping up with it anyway.
And getting back to the Melbourne Garden Show, one of the gardens that impressed me, it stays in my mind, and I haven't had the time to research it more, but you had their achievement gardens, which were put together by landscapers that are on L plates coming through, and they did a lot of boutique display gardens, and they were very, very high standard. There was one garden that captured me, so for a courtyard, where one side was black foliage and the other side was silver foliage with a pathway through the middle. And oh my goodness, that has played on my mind. It is just, to me, different, clever. It looks stunning. And I just, can't get it out of my head, just the way that it's been orchestrated. And I'm sure you could find this. Well, firstly, I know that the show is being covered on TV. So if you have the functionality to play back any of the programs that did cover the garden show, you may see it. You may not, but you could maybe Google if you're into the, you know, websites, if you can do it.
Well,
the one I'm talking about?
Saw that, Ray, I just went, Ray will love this.
I just flipped.
The burgundy plants, the dark.
I flipped. So you know what I'm like.
And I took photos, Ray, so they're still on my camera.
Too.
So I have processed all my photos, I will put together an album on the Let's Talk Gardening Facebook page.
Just great ideas, you know.
Oh, yes.
It doesn't have to be what we think it has to be. And that's it. It's thinking outside. And this was just so clever.
I mean, those garden's also inspiring. You know, you look at your own garden. Well, I come home to my garden and I've still got gaps between everything.
Yeah.
Often in those show gardens, they are wall-to-wall plants. And I, you know, I could take in any pocket of garden and just throw more plants into it. Yep. But having said that, I came home to my garden and the raised bed that I planted with marigolds and snapdragons, and it's raised. I mean, I'm talking desk height here. Something's been in there and it's nipped the tops off. And then those pollinator pots I did, the kangaroo paw, the little yellow daisy spilling over. The friggin' Easter bunny's been
terrible.
Had a feast. It's either that or rats.
Rats.
So I've got a slow motion sensor
That's
camera.
That's what you need.
It's going out. I found one of the flowers from that pot outside my study window, which is on the other side of the house, and I'm going...
It took it around to the other side.
And that would be a rat.
Yeah, feeding a nest.
Mm. Oh, is that what it is?
Jeez. So it's that time. Mm. And you know what? It doesn't matter what I think about doing in my garden at the moment.
You're challenged.
If I do not deal with these problems right now... I've lost all the scovolas I put in. I've bought these three beautiful scovolas under hanging baskets. The hang baskets have been moved and they've just been chewed down. It's feeding time for the rabbits.
Yeah, so that's just
war.
Very frustrating and soul destroying as well. It's just difficult to be, well, you're up against the elements there.
And I would have a beautiful garden if everything I planted survived.
Yeah, it wasn't eaten. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, rats don't help at all.
They're just a big ongoing problem, aren't they?
They are.
Don't get us started. All right, guys, you've got 10 minutes left of the program to get your gardening calls through to us, 94841927. I get the feeling you want to say something.
Well, back on to nicer things.
Yes.
Terry has asked a question about 6 11-year-old French panties, and heard on the show recently the best time to prune them back is at the end of March, which I think is a really good time if they need to be done. So mine have grown tall and leggy and I would like to prune them over the next 2 to 3 weeks. If they are tall and leggy, now is the time to do them because they have to be done. So do it while the weather is still warm. They will heal over before the cool weather comes. And I know that our John B pruned his French panties this week.
Of which he has many.
And he now has 90 cuttings. Mm. So if he can do it now, so can you.
Yeah, exactly. He's the boss. All right, we shall return. Curtain Radio. And here we are. We're going straight out to the lines. This is Let's Talk Gardening. Oh, we're talking about gross grasshoppers. We're in Champion Lakes. Faye, good morning.
Good morning. Hello,
good morning.
Ladies.
Great Not show. Often I get to say hi to another Faye.
I live at a lifestyle village. We have 3 Fays in our village. Oh. I've not come across any Fays recently other than that either.
Oh, wow. All right. How can we help you, Faye?
Yes, I don't know if you can, but the crickets, and there's 2 varieties. There's the green ones, the bigger green ones are eating my, that's not such a problem, eating the leaves on my sweet potato, which is climbing up the fence. But the smaller, browner coloured ones are eating all the leaves and the tips off of my roses.
Yes. Well, we do have a very large growing variety of grasshopper, and that's the Belanga irregularis, and their babies can be different colours. So they can be a problem. They'll eat some of your leaves. They're food for birds. There's not a lot that you can do to actually repel them. Shooting them off with jets of water and disturbing them might be one thing, or picking
they
them
jump
out
back.
By
let,
hand.
Let me tell you. Yeah. And they do knock off the heads of things, Faye. I know that.
Yeah. I didn't think that. I've just been spraying them off. But they come back once the spray dries out, the water dries out.
Yeah, they're very resilient.
I know they're beneficial in the, you know, to the wildlife. So
part of the food chain. Try something like seaweed, a seaweed spray over your plants, and or molasses.
Yes.
That can potentially act as a deterrent, but it's also beneficial to the plant. So it's a bit of a win-win.
And, of course, neem oil has been qualified as a deterrent as well.
Neem oil.
And I've read also they don't like fish. They don't like the smell of fish.
So spraying your plants with a fish product.
Well, sea salt's got fish product, isn't it?
Well, that's got seaweed, but there are fish emulsions, Charlie Carp, etc.
Yeah.
So that is honestly the way I'd go, because then you're not messing up any part of the food chain, Faye.
Sounds good.
All right. Good luck with that.
Thank you, ladies. And my daughter, who lives in Thornley, they had a whole vine, a couple of months vine full of passion fruit that just were ripening up, and they come out one morning and they were all gone. Just all eaten.
By the grasshoppers?
With you.
Oh, by rats.
Not by grasshoppers.
No.
Probably rat or possum.
Yeah, it's not easy. As I say, we're a resilient lot here in Perth as gardeners. Take care, love.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Lovely show.
Thanks. Bye.
Someone rang in and said they suggest cutting a tube of toothpaste, Colgate they say, in half and putting it amongst your plants to deter rats. Have you heard that one before?
Well, I've heard about putting it in the roof. So
good grief. Yeah. Toothpaste.
But I've also heard cake mix is something that can... So I might put cake mix outside my study window.
Yeah. It's hard.
It's not fair.
No, it's not fair. We're in Banjup. Hi, Mary. How are you going?
I'm fantastic. How's everyone there?
Very good, thanks, Mary.
With this weather, we have to put in another driveway, and I have one of George Lowell Fitz's many hundreds of 4 metre high gum trees. I'm not sure what variety it is, but I bucketed water out in the middle of no man's land, and it's the only plant that's got to go. Can I move it? We've got the machinery to do it. How can I mean, now's the time just to prune it back a little. What else can I do? We've got big machinery that can move it.
I don't like your chances, but you can do it and see what happens. You know what? One thing, many years ago, to put up a pergola, we cut down a large gum tree, and I had it locked into blocks like stepping stones, and one of the blocks was laying on the ground, and it sent up a shoot.
Yep.
So I would say you could, you know, lop it back. Why not try?
Nothing to lose.
I don't like your chances, but...
I love this one, and it was bucketed. And one day I even put hoses out, and I went to pick my hose up. And it wasn't a hose, it was a tiger snake I was picking up.
Stop it, Mary. Oh, my God.
Well, that's a different story. You know, nobody's probably done it, so you just never know.
I bought so many, I just don't know what it was, but I managed, you know, every second day it got a bucket of water from the showers or whatever.
Yeah, that's great.
So, okay, well, I thought you'd have a little more help than that, but thanks a lot and have a great weekend.
Well, it'll be a lot of effort, whether it makes it or not. You know, it would also be on a lot of factors. How well have you prepared the whole, is it the right time to do it, because you just have to do it now probably.
It is.
The weather conditions ahead of us going into winter is possibly not ideal, but you've got the machinery.
Yep.
Go for it.
And we've got a big bucket on one of the machines, so maybe we can just dig the whole darn thing out after I prune it a little bit.
Good luck. It's not a task I would tackle.
Thank you.
Sorry.
Thanks, Mary.
Go around it with the driveway. Go around it.
We can't. We really can't. And I said, you are not removing that tree. I love it, and it but there's no alternatives at all. Right, okay. Not at all.
Oh, you've got to do what you've got to do, Mary. Take care, love. We've got to go. Thanks, Mary. Ciao. Okay, bye. Bruce, thank you so much for this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Mention that event coming up again in May. We'll give it our listeners a reminder as well on the day prior. It's in the Swan Valley.
Swan View. In Salisbury Road. So it's on Sunday the 5th of May, 9 till 3. And we would love to see people there and we'd love to answer your questions and talk awkwards.
You've given listeners 1,000 reasons to attend, so including us. So we wish you well with that. And you've been so informative today for our listeners. And, of course, don't forget, those of you that can, we do post our podcast on the Curtin FM website each week. There's a lot of valuable information sitting there, and you can go and re-listen to Bruce's information. I know I'm going to, because sometimes I am preoccupied here looking around and watching other things and, you know, watching the clock, etc. I need to...
It's hard to focus, isn't it, Ray?
It can be. It can be distracting, you know. That's all I'm saying.
Those damn rats.
Faye, thank you very much. And to our beautiful Bev Daring. And he's not too bad looking either, that John Glidden fella. Thank you, guys. Appreciate you very much. My gardenism for the morning is, when everything looks like a magical oil painting, you know you are in autumn. Stay with us for George Minoldi coming up next with the classic 60s. And we do look forward to speaking with you again next Saturday. Happy Easter and, hey, happy gardening. Look after yourselves. We hope you've enjoyed listening to another edition of Let's Talk Gardening on Curtin Radio. Happy gardening.